Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Major General Richard Thomas, Director of the Defense Health Agency's Healthcare Operations Directorate. So, General, would you tell us more about the Laboratory Development Tests Demonstration Project, the LDTs? What are the benefits derived from this project, and what remains to be done?
Sure, Michael. That's a good question, and it's something when I first came to the DHA a little over a year ago, one of the early challenges we had was these laboratory-developed tests, or these LDTs. Specifically, these are laboratory-developed tests refers to a certain class of tests that can detect, say, a disease or a condition or, maybe an infectious process. And by the LDTs are considered medical devices, according to the Food and Drug Administration. Federal regulations prohibit TRICARE from paying for a cost-sharing of devices that can't be lawfully marketed without FDA approval. And that's how they tell us. So in order for TRICARE to cover these, then we have to have FDA approval. The problem is, as I alluded to before, is, oftentimes medicine, especially military medicine, is emerging at the speed of combat. So we may not have the outcomes or the approvals through FDA for some of these things that have become more or less the standard of practice, but not yet the standard of care. And so what we want to make sure is we protect and sustain the benefit for our patients that we can provide, state-of-the-art medicine in real time. Mm-hmm. And so with these emerging technologies, we want to be able to we've been given permission by Congress to use demonstration authority to carefully analyze some of these emerging technologies and treatments and get some outcomes. That helps us, enables us to, do cost shares for our patients. As I mentioned before, this is important because the majority of our 9.5 million beneficiaries don't get their care on a military installation in a military hospital. Most of them get it through our TRICARE network, if you will. So what we did with the laboratory-developed tests was we started a demonstration project. We had a joint lab work group of experts, subject matter experts, take a list of folks, and they've already come up with, I call them the Nifty 50. It's about 50 of these LDTs. They've been reviewed, and they've made a recommendation on coverage. Mm-hmm. So that's been sent to the DHA Defense Health Agency Director, Lieutenant General Rob, for his approval. So this, really allows us to pay for these tests and to continue to utilize them because they're, as I mentioned, many of them are really the standard of practice, not yet the standard of care. So we're continuing that effort. We will continue to take a look at new and emerging technologies. Many of these things that are coming out are exciting. Many of them are genetic tests, genetic-based tests, which will help us to predict and to focus our treatments for some of these patients. And so this demonstration project will help us to kind of reduce that disparity, again, in the range of medical tests that are provided across multiple military health system treatment platforms.
So, General, what are you doing or what's being done to create a culture of patient safety and quality across the enterprise, the military health system? What initiatives are being pursued to implement the evidence-based safe practices program?
Well, I think it we pride ourselves in military medicine at really making sure that we provide safe and effective care for our patients, and we're very good at that. We have that responsibility. Now, I mentioned some of these new and emerging techniques and treatments. Someone has to hold the line on these things to make sure that we're not first do no harm, that we pursue that all the time with everything that we try to provide to our patients, even the state-of-the-art care. As I mentioned, we've got about 9.5 million Americans that are entitled to health care coverage in our system, in our Department of Defense. And with those folks that come to us for care, you saw last year some issues that arose with the Veterans Administration health care system. It's not us. We're separate from them. But, a lot of our certainly our former service members receive their care there. So in May of last year, the Secretary of Defense ordered a comprehensive review of the military health system in the aftermath of the issues that were, really brought to light in the VA. And so that review was really done to assess whether our access measures in the MHS were meeting a defined standard and really look at our quality of the health care that we're providing. Were we hitting defined benchmarks, yes or no? And the military health system has also created this culture of safety that you just mentioned, Michael, with the effective processes for ensuring safe and reliable care for our beneficiaries. And that's our goal. So This is really the first time the MHS has ever taken an enterprise view with such a large scope in these specific areas of access, quality, and patient safety. Now, what we found, first off, we put together a team of experts, which included some subject matter experts from outside the DOD, recognized experts in some of these areas. And so we found that the Military Health System Review Team that we put together, they said, overall, we're really providing safe, timely, and quality care. So that's a good news story. Now, in areas such as surgery issues, if you will, or complications, we report 100% of the time in the military healthcare system. But the outside in the civilian sector, they only have about 10% of the folks that use that data or those benchmarks. So we're comparing ourselves to really the top 10, if you will, because people voluntarily do that only because they think they're that good. And on the outside, you know, also most hospitals don't use the same reporting, but the recognized national standard reporting metrics for quality and access and those types of things is what we're comparing ourselves to. So we look pretty good overall, but, you know, it's important, Michael, that people appreciate the fact we're a learning organization. We want to get better. And what was good about this review was for the first time we had an enterprise view on how we were doing. Yeah. And we saw some good things. We saw some outliers, too. Not so good, some areas for improvement. So as a learning organization, we want to be able to recognize that and standardize that. So what's happened as a result of that is we are now putting together a repository of data with metrics, defined metrics, to take a look at ourselves in areas of access, quality of care, and patient safety metrics, which will be resident in the DHA, and all the services, and Secretary Woodson also, will have an opportunity to take a look in there, comparing themselves, compare and contrast a particular hospital against everyone else, but the entire enterprise view with those metrics. That's important. And that's really the key of the DHA. That's the kind of value we can bring. We're supporting the services. They can take a look at how they're doing. They can compare and contrast. If we see there's an outlier, a best practice perhaps, what are they doing so right at that place that others can learn from? Or if there's a problem, certainly recognizing that, and then the services can focus on, you know, on correcting it. So it's a great move forward. It really is how we can get better as an organization.
And speaking about getting better, I was wondering if you could talk to us about the clinical programs that are in place to diagnose, prevent, and treat service members in the mental health area. More importantly, what is being done to reduce the stigma associated with seeking mental health care in DOD?
Well, certainly, I think one of the big challenges for us over the last, 12 to 13 years, continuous combat operations, we've seen a significant increase in the requirement for behavioral health or psychological health care and services. Some of that is probably the natural aftermath of the continual stress that goes on. But it's definitely an increased awareness that there is a need or requirement for additional services. So there's been a collaborative effort. Really, all the services have gotten after this and trying to increase the number of behavioral health providers that they have. But there's also been some programs, some programs which have helped with access to those providers and programs put in place to reduce the stigma. And I think the stigma reduction is probably the more challenging of them. We're never going to have, I think, enough mental health or behavioral health providers to meet the entire need. But we can do better with access measures. And so we're carefully monitoring. All the services are doing that, you know, and watching how they their access standards. And they are meeting them. For the most part, they are. But the stigma isn't. That's the cultural change that will have to come with that. I think that we've seen this with behavioral health services. We've seen it, for example, a good example was traumatic brain injury. Our task force on traumatic brain injury, you know, I remember, and as you do too, Michael, I mean, there was a time when if you got, your bell rung or you saw stars, they just tell you to shake it off and go back at it. We've learned from, a direct correlation with our combat operations. We've addressed for the first time and established for the first time an algorithm for care, a map on how do you take care, an events-driven protocol, and how do you take care of someone who gets a concussive injury. And that was never done before. And so the military medicine has developed that. We've shared that with society. The NFL adopted our measures, for example. Okay. Next to football, the folks that get the most concussions are girl soccer players. So all of society will benefit from what we're doing in military medicine. And that's not new. That's our historical perspective. As I mentioned, whether it's infectious disease care or it's traumatic brain injury or it's pain management, we lead the way and innovative in creating opportunities for folks to improve the healthcare delivery in those areas. And it benefits all of society. Behavioral health, I think when we think about behavioral health, you know, what we have found over time is that, and I mentioned the TBI, that if you've got someone with a traumatic brain injury, oftentimes they also have post-traumatic stress. And they may develop chronic pain associated conditions with that. As a matter of fact, our research shows about 40% of folks have all three. So it's not just a single entity. It's really the comorbid conditions that we want to address. So very complex, and we've got to tailor our programs that can address specifically those issues that these folks have. And many times it's concomitant issues. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. We stood up the National Intrepid Center for Excellence and other traumatic brain injury and post-traumatic stress centers to deal with these complex patients. But the key for us is we have enabled at the first line, at the primary care level, we've enhanced training and enabled those folks that are touching those patients first to early recognition of signs and symptoms and the direction of to appropriate care as early as possible. And I think that's helped. And it's also by pushing those capabilities to the primary care clinics, you help to reduce the stigma associated with that. There was a time, Michael, I remember when if you needed to go see a psychiatrist, you went to a clinic separate across the post. And now we have folks that actually are getting that care right in their primary care clinic, and it helps to destigmatize the care.
Mm-hmm. In general, you've mentioned a couple of times jointness and the importance of that to the success of the military medicine. What are some of the key challenges, cultural challenges, inherent in changing how a large system, such as the military health system, and in particular your agency, how it operates, what are you doing to tackle the cultural changes and foster the jointness across the agency?
Well, you know, Michael, I think, you know, we've kind of been talking around that issue, and it's very important. I think that the key challenges that we've seen, it's all about coalition building, if you will. Folks that work in Army medicine, Air Force medicine, Navy medicine, what have you, they're very proud of what they do, and they're very good. And they have right to be proud. Mm-hmm. But just as we deploy forces to a combat zone or to an area to provide disaster assistance or humanitarian relief, you know, efforts. It's a joint force that does that, joint medical force too. So we want to be more joint. We're going to be more joint in the future. That's the way of the future. So as I mentioned, the services all evolved the way they did with their own areas of core competencies and expertise for a good reason. You know, as an Army doctor, I say if I'm doing undersea medicine, someone's having a bad day, you know, particularly the patient. But, you know, no one really questions the quality of care that an Army medic or a Navy corpsman provides. And I think that no one questions how good the Air Force is at evacuating or transporting critically ill patients in a theater. They're good at what they do. The DHA, the Defense Health Agency, really focuses on those other things that aren't necessary core competencies for the services, but this is where the jointness comes in. Let us help you. Let us help you with some of the business aspects, some of those enterprise services or shared services that I mentioned before. Let us help you do those better so that you can focus on your core missions and be even better than what you are. That's the support that we're here to provide. So those cultural changes are significant because they're new. But I think that what we'll find, just like other combat support agencies, for example, the Defense Logistics Agency or Defense Intelligence agencies, those other combat support agencies, over time, they eventually will mature, and people get to the point that they really don't remember a time when they didn't have them around, you know, and they realize that they just provide value and they provide support, and you know, and it's going to be okay.
What does the future hold for the Defense Health Agency? We will ask Major General Richard Thomas, Director of the Defense Health Agency's Healthcare Operations Directorate, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.